Hello, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you're joining us from. Welcome to the School of Mary live cynical series, and this is Crossing the Exile Together. And we're going to do that today. And I'd like to bring in, before we begin our prayer, our co-host this evening, which is going to be Maureen Lamini, who is the co-host also of the ebook series, Mary Celie ebook series on Friday evenings. That's 2 days from today. And Ken Johnson, Catholic radio host. We're just so happy to have both here because that means you get to hear a lot less of me. And that's a good thing, I'm sure. So what we're going to do is we're going to begin with prayer. I see Maureen's having a little difficulty with the computer. We'll go as far as we can, Maureen. It's all come divine will, be in that battery. So we're going to begin. Oh, let me just first unmute everyone. Unmute and Ken. Hi, Ken.
Hi, everybody. Hello, hello.
Hello. So,
there. See, so nice to hear. How dare I keep everyone on mute? Oh, what a terrible, terrible guy I am. We're going to begin with a supplication, Maureen. And okay. It's a beautiful supplication, if we may.
Okay. Let me get this down. Sorry. The Virgin Mary in the Kingdom of the Divine Will, Day 24, Supplication. Lesson of the Mother Queen. Now, dear daughter, listen to how much I and this dear baby love you. For at the dawn of his life, he goes into exile and into a foreign land in order to free you from the exile in which your human will put you, so as to call you back to live, not in a foreign land, but in your fatherland, which was given to you by God when you were created, that is, the kingdom of the supreme fiat. Daughter of my heart, have pity on the tears of your mother and on the tears of this sweet dear baby, as we, crying, ask you never to do your will. But come back, we pray you. We implore you into the bosom of the divine will, so much, which so much longs for you. The soul to our Queen. Most sweet Mama, how much I thank you for making me comprehend the great evil of the human will. Therefore, I pray you, for the sake of the sorrow you suffered in the exile of Egypt, to make my soul go out of the exile of my will and to make me repatriate to the dear fatherland of the divine will. Little sacrifice, today, to honor me, you will offer your actions united with mine in act of gratitude to the holy baby, praying him to enter into the Egypt of your heart in order to change it all into will of God. Ejaculatory prayer. My mama, enclose little Jesus in my heart, that he may reorder it all into divine will.
We ask all this through Christ our Lord. Amen. Thank you, Maureen. Yeah, the Virgin Mary in the Kingdom, Ken, is just, you know, the more I read it, the more fascinated is not the greatest word to use, but I'm just enthralled with it because it's Our Lady. And you know, and doing some digestion into the Catechism also, Our Lady is spoken about. I mean, I love Article 507. Let me just a snippet, please. Quote, at once virgin and mother, Mary is the symbol and the most perfect realization of the church. End quote. I can't wait to see what they write about Our Lady once this, once the divine will gets full traction. Fifth dogma?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me see. Is Ken still muted?
Yeah, I'm unmuted.
Okay.
Man, I couldn't agree more. I just had a priest on the radio from 5 to 6 tonight, and we're talking about Marian consecration. And even outside of the gift of the divine will, you know, folks over the years that have made a consecration to Jesus through Mary, and I know that was what propelled me in my spiritual life starting in 1993 and making that consecration in 97. And I know the Blessed Mother has been carrying me ever since. And then just to have her to be an integral part of this gift of the divine will, it just makes, you know, perfect sense. And I know she's carrying me through this as well.
You said it makes sense, you know, and that's a great way to put this, because, you know, we, our whole lives, for the most part, I think, have not made sense, because, you know, we've got God and our DNA pulling us, let's say, to the right. And then you've got the entire world pulling us to the left. And of course, we're not Gumby, and we're going to start feeling that strain and that pain. And that's the field that that Jesus talks about. He says the field is wide open. Think about it. God is God. And then when Satan says, I will not serve, he leaves. He goes to the far end of the room, the farthest end of the room he can. Well, what does that leave? It leaves all the middle as the field. And that's really all of us, all of our souls that are up for grab. And God allows Satan to test us, to challenge us, to prod us. But again, grace anticipates the soul. He always gives us what we need when we need it. And, you know, Ken, I was thinking about, Maureen, I was thinking about something also, the crossing the exile, you know, this whole series. A lot of times we're always anxious, or we're excited to get to the end. We want to get to the destination, the final destination. But a lot of times the journey is quite important. Sometimes it's quite fascinating. I know Ken just came back from Europe. You know, European trains, you don't want to go to sleep. I mean, trains in the Northeast, you want to go to sleep, because the tracks are usually behind factories and not in the most pleasant areas. But trains in Europe, you're getting all the scenery of wherever you are, Switzerland, Italy, Austria, just beautiful. You don't want to snooze on that. We don't want to snooze on this either, because crossing the exile, as we're making our way, clawing our way back to the divine will, God is watching us. I mean, he's explained to us, he's watching us. And he likes every time we're challenged. He doesn't like the fact that we're going through ups and downs and this is a roller coaster, but he does like the fact that we're bouncing back, that we're never giving up. We have that perseverance, that constancy. And he's with us all the time. He knows we have to put in our time, basically. We have to prove to him that we really want to be reunited with him. We want this gift of the divine. We want to be back the way Adam was, the way Eve was, and the way we were supposed to be. And I guess the plan A that that Jesus talks about. We went over something last week, which I think was extraordinary, Maureen, the volume 17, mm-hmm. October 23rd, which I think really is the crux of this entire series. We've got the new material today, but I was wondering, without my interruption, mm-hmm. would you be able to read in the red, just so we can just handle this? I want to make a quick comment. I want to hear Ken's reaction to it, and then we can start on a new material, because I think this will bring us into the flavor of what is in store for us today.
Okay. This enchantment has the virtue of preventing my justice from pouring out with all its fury upon the face of the earth, because my justice too remains enchanted by my will operating in the creature. Do you think it is trivial that the Creator sees in the creatures who are still living upon earth His divine will operating, triumphant, ruling with the same freedom with which it operates and rules in heaven? However, this enchantment in heaven is opposite, because my will dominates in its kingdom as if in its own house, and the enchantment is formed within myself, not outside of me. Therefore, it is my will that enchants all the blessed with an enrapturing power in such a way that their pupils are enclosed in my enchantment to be eternally beatified. So it is not they who form the sweet enchantment for me, but I for them. And so my pupils are free and receive no charm. On the other hand, my will, living in the creature who is crossing the exile, is as though operative and ruling in the house of the creature, which is more amazing. And this is why she forms for me a more pleasing enchantment, which charms me and holds such attraction for my gaze as to captivate me to fix my pupils upon her without being able to move them. Ah, you do not know how necessary this enchantment is in these times in which so many evils will come. The peoples will be forced to eat one another. They will be taken by such rage as to become fierce, one against the other. But the greatest guilt is of the leaders. Poor peoples, they have true slaughterers, incarnate devils as leaders, who want to slaughter their brothers. If the evils were not grave, your Jesus would not leave you as though deprived of him. You fear that it may be for other things that I deprive you of me. No, no, be reassured. It is my justice that, depriving you of me, wants to pour out upon creatures. You, however, never go out of my will, so that its sweet enchantment may spare the people's worst evils. Fiat.
You know, Ken, I think in this end of this passage, I think Jesus is really explaining to us not only the importance of the exile, but the difference, the differentiation between those in heaven, which are, again, to put it in very lay terms, in heaven, they have no choice. They have to live in the divine will. Of course, they're all excited about that. But on earth, we have a choice. We can reject it or we can accept it. And he talks about this enchantment. And again, God is so great at this. He gives us the answers to the quiz before we take the quiz. We need extra help. We need extra grace. God has to be just, though. He has to give us what we deserve. And we don't deserve anything right now. We're trying to catch up and make up for all those lost times and those lost opportunities. But he's saying, you're going to need extra grace. And here, I'm going to devise a way in which you can do it. I'm going to give you this journey. I'm going to give it to you with your ups and downs. I'm going to give it to you with grace. I'm going to give you everything you need. But I like this journey because I see how much you desire this. I see how much you want this. My pupils are focused on you. Then he almost has an excuse, not that he needs an excuse, but he has the justification. I think that's a better word to use, to give us the additional grace and graces that we need. I mean, it's incredible that he's giving us. I mean, why couldn't he just bring us from point A to point B? He can. But he puts this gray area in between, this field in between, so that, again, the wheat, the thistle, the thorns, the flowers, all that can grow together. We can help each other. We can hurt each other. Our destiny really is up to us. Do we want this or do we not want this? Any comments on that, Ken?
Yeah, Peter, I thank God every day I didn't get what I deserved. If I had gotten what I deserved, I'd have been dead or in jail a long, long time ago. Yeah. And, you know, I just think about, and you're a father, Maureen's a mother. And, you know, we think about it, our own kids. And a lot of times when I'm reading this, I look at it from God the Father's eyes. And I had a friend of mine, a Protestant friend, many years ago, trying to evangelize me and you know, asking me if I had a personal relationship with God. And he had just had a baby. And, you know, I said to him, what would that baby have to do for you to banish him from your sight and tell that baby that you never want to see them again? And he said, Ken, there's nothing that he could do. And I said, and Matt, your love is imperfect. It's a human love. Now, the love of God, imagine what you would have to do to God the Father in order for him to say, Ken or Peter or Maureen, I never want to see you again. And it's funny, I lost touch with Matt for a number of years, and I actually heard from him about 2 months ago, and he's now Catholic. but it's just how loving our God is. And we talk about these small enchantments, and that's all it seems to take in order for him to hold off on some of these chastisements. I also thank God that I'm not God, because I probably would have sent the floods times over just in the last 60 years I've been on the planet. But I'm not God. And the idea that even though I try to live in the divine will and I, far from perfectly, and like most other people, I think I go in and out, and that the times that I'm in, I think enchants God enough to maybe help postpone some of those chastisements. I was re-listening to the show from last week. I'm sorry I couldn't be here, but the idea that somehow or other we as children of the divine will can hold God's hand back, if you will, from bringing the chastisements. And who knows, maybe to the point where we get enough folks to believe as we do, mm-hmm. that we put them off altogether. Who knows?
It's true. And you know, Maureen, I love the fact that when he gives us that analogy about, you know, again, in heaven, again, really to give blatantly terms, there's no option. They all live in the divine will. But on earth, you know, we have that choice. And he gives us that great example here. It's almost, again, we use an analogy. It's like the parents, when the children join the rosary, when the children join grace before meal, they're doing it basically because they have to. I mean, they mm-hmm. may want to also, mm-hmm. but the joy of once the children go out of the house, they're in their mm-hmm. own home, and you go visit them and you see the rosary being prayed. You see grace being said before meals in their house. You know, then it took roots. And that's, I think, what Jesus is saying here. He wants us to take the roots, even though that field is rocky. Yeah. He wants us to put those roots down and get as much traction as we can. Again, he's going to be there, giving us that little nudge, a little push, and sometimes knocking us down if we have to. And Ken, I know that he's knocked us down. Maureen, he never knocked you down. But
you didn't know me. You didn't know me in those days. But you know, I was thinking as a mom, and I was thinking of being in my house all cozy, and there's a big storm out there, thunder and lightning, and my children are trying to get home. And every little, as close as they can get, and you know, oh, they're at this block, or they're doing this, or someone's going to drive them, all these things would get me, I'm compared to God the Father, you know, I would get excited for each little step they get to come home. Now, the children that are already in my house during this storm, I'm happy they're there, but I'm looking out the window at the other ones, wanting and praying that they get to where we are. And that's what I was thinking with this. And that last sentence where God says that it's the sweet enchantment may spare the people's worst evils. And I was thinking about one thing that I read in the Divine Will. I don't know if we read it last week or if I read it in our cenacle, but how as Catholics, we pray reparation and we pray for souls. But in the divine will, it's a whole new dimension. So that's all well and good. But the power of the divine will, I don't even think we understand it yet. It's too wonderful. It's too far from the human mind. And so that's encouraging to me that in the divine will, we can help spare the people's worst evils. I mean, that's huge. It spurs us on, you know, to help save souls, and in a deeper way that I don't think we can comprehend.
Yeah, to Ken's point, you know, if we were God, we would have probably, you know, did away with everyone by now, because our patience would not have been what God has. But again, here he gives us, allowing Satan to do whatever he's going to do. Again, never invalidating our free will. And then as things really take a turn for the worse, I mean, the 20th century is horrific with respect to death, both in wartime and in abortion. So Satan has his way. He thinks he's winning. And God says, okay, now I'm really going to get this sort of game over. I'm bringing the divine will back. I didn't do it intentionally. I didn't hold it back intentionally. Jesus tells us in the volumes, it's been 6,000 years since Adam fell. And God wanted to make sure that everything was at our disposal so that we could not fail. We have, again, what did Jesus tell us? He told us everything that that we have, and I probably don't have the, but I've read this many times. He says that everything that he has done has had as its primary purpose that God allow us to come back to his divine will. Everything he's done for us, the saints, the sacraments, the church, the Eucharist, everything has been, as he calls it, a seed or a means in which to return. That's why the church has to keep moving, has to keep transforming, has to keep being reshaped until it serves its purpose, which is to bring us back to the order, the place, and the purpose which were created by God, the prelapsator of Adam. It has to. It cannot be static. And that's why many who stay firm to tradition, and I like that, but again, we can take tradition and move with God. You know, God is moving us, and he's moving us in the right direction. But the divine will is everything, and we know that we need it on this journey. We need it in the exile. And then again, God's giving us this exile for a reason. This is the Aberdeen Proving Grounds, as they say, back in a couple of different shows back in the 50s. And this is where it all comes out. But we have it all. We have it all. And, you know, Ken, Maureen, I was thinking about it. God says before, when we read this also, that the most important thing that we need to do is to move God, you know, to give him a reason to give us this gift and the graces that we need. He wants to see that we want this, of course. He's a prudent giver. But then he takes it to the next level. He's now going to be enchanted. He's going to allow himself to be enchanted. And, you know, I was thinking about enchantment and happiness. And I guess we talked about this last week too. Happiness is, I guess, included in enchantment. I mean, happiness is, the way I look at it is happiness is in front of me, but enchantment is all around me. Does that make any sense? I mean, how would you think about enchant? He wants to be enchanted. He is enchanted by our journey in the exile, especially when we give our fiat the divine will. How do you explain enchantment? I mean, do you have a definition for it? I don't want Webster's definition. I want the language of heaven definition. I haven't gotten it yet.
Well, I'm thinking of that picture of the guy in the desert. I mean, that's us. And it's a hard road. So just to look up and say, Lord, I'm thirsty. Here, take some water. Take a sip of water. Keep moving. Lord, I'm hot. Well, here's a little umbrella so the sun doesn't get on your back. Like that's how I see it. Like he's moved by our journey. He's moved that every time we fall, we get up again. He's moved by our prayers, our ardent prayers and our desires. It's I think that almost a little bit like he's seeing how hard we're trying. And even if we're not getting there quickly, he's seeing our effort. And he wants to help us, and he becomes enchanted by our love for him, I think, even though it's an impossible, it looks like an impossible journey with the winds and the sun beating down on us. And so he's there to guide us.
Without God, it is an impossible journey. Ken, I don't know if you were, but when I was younger, I didn't speak negatively of God, but he just wasn't in my life. I felt like I didn't need to call him. All right. I don't know if that makes any sense. He wasn't there. I mean, he was always there, but I didn't acknowledge him being there because I thought I didn't need him. I thought it was a big shot.
Wow. The only time I acknowledged him was when I took his name in vain. And I'm not happy to say that, but this idea of enchantment, it's almost like God is mesmerized or so focused on us that it's even a higher level than joy. Like I always think of happiness as being fleeting. There's things that make us happy and it'll make us happy for a moment or for a short period of time. And then there's that true joy that seems to last a whole lot longer. But I think enchantment even takes it to the next level. Not that God can't believe that we're actually doing something right and doing it in his will, but that when he sees himself basically in action, when he sees his own will acting in and through us, he becomes fixated on us, just like we would become fixated on our kids when they're playing a ball game or, you know, a baby taking their first steps. It enchants us. We're focused on that and nothing else. And to think that God might be able to do the same thing with us when we happen to be doing what he expects and that we have his complete attention is the way I would look at it. And, and that can be scary at times because I think we have his complete attention all the time for better or worse. But the idea that when we actually do something good, that we, when we are living in the divine will, that he's enchanted. He's fixated on us as we do that.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, Angelica just said, parents are enchanted by their babies, can't take their eyes off them. I think that's exactly what it is. God cannot take, he cannot remove his pupils from us. I think he says that in the reading we're going to have today, if we ever get to it, where he cannot take his pupils off us. And yeah, you're right that, you know, Candy is watching us. In fact, he tells Louisa, do you remember this? He says, he actually uses the word, I'm spying on you.
Yeah.
He's, I'm spying on you. I'm watching you. You know, this is really, I think, what we need to get. I need to get in my thick head. We can pretend everybody around us and we can, you know, put on different hats, but nothing can be hidden from God. So it gives us really the discipline, I think, the reason, the motivation to be good. Well, why not? I mean, to be sinful or to engage in a sinful act, you know, I remember Father DeMai used to say, well, all sins have some degree of good, a little good there somewhere. But again, it's not in the act itself. It's what allures us perhaps there. But the moment's fleeting. And then if we really rationalize and think about, okay, when we're done here on earth, we don't know when that day is going to be, that moment's going to be, there's only one of two places our soul is going to live forever. How long is forever? That's a long time. It's hell or heaven. So I think when I get that through my thick head, that's the reason, that's the motivation. And then to help those around us. I mean, you know, Father Donald Calloway, you know, I think we all know him. He's had a tremendous reversion. He was a pretty wild kid. But the thing that brought him over the hump was when his mother was dying and his mother said to him, son, you must change because I don't want to be in heaven without you. Mm. And that's what made him start to think, wait a minute. Yes, I have an opportunity to be with mom forever in heaven. But if I don't exercise that, I'm going to be absent from her, or she'll be absent from me for that same duration forever. That's a wake up call. How long's forever, Ken? It's a long time, right?
It's a long, long time. I had a coworker when I was working in IT, and I would go out to daily mass at lunchtime. And when I first started working with him a couple times, he said, hey, where are you going for lunch? And it's like, oh, I'm going down to St. Isaac's for mass. You want to go with? And he's like, nah, that's all right. That's all right. And I found out later he was Catholic. And then I started to say to him, you know, eternity is a long, long time. And when he retired, I would get text messages from him every once in a while. And he was back to church. And he would text me and say, you know what? Eternity is a long, long time. But I had an interview with another gentleman last week. And Bishop Barron says he's a future doctor of the church, René Girard. And in his writings, and the gentleman I interviewed, Gil Bailey, they talk about, you know, everything in life is a yes or no to Christ. From the moment we're born until they, you know, throw that last shovel full of dirt on us, it's, you know, it's a yes or no for Christ and in everything we do. And I think when I sin, when I look back and really look at it, it's, I don't trust God. I think that he's not going to be the, you know, give me all the joy and happiness. And so I seek it out in other ways, and not nearly as bad as it used to be, but there's still those moments. And so, you know, for me, it's become a matter of trust. And I think that that's the beauty of this gift of the divine will, that it emphasizes so much that it is a gift and that it is where our complete joy is, and allows us to trust God, just like, you know, Louisa did. How many times does she question, are you ever coming back? Where you been? Are you going to leave me hanging here all the time?
You've changed.
And,
yeah.
And I listened to changed. Yeah. And I listened to Maureen last week, you know, basically say the same thing, you know, it how good it makes her feel that if, you know, Louisa was asking and she was meeting with them on a regular basis, you know, it's no wonder we have questions. Right. But, yeah. But, and seeing Jesus' response to her questions and how gentle they are, it's allowed me to trust him more than ever.
Well, you know, it's really interesting too. I think most of us know this, but all those questions, all those doubts that it sounded like Louisa had, she had none of those. Jesus actually said toward the end of her life, because she was lamenting, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I doubted you." He said, "No, you never doubted me. You never lacked trust." And I think it was Father Celso told us that Father Bucci explained that those questions that she was asking, those positions that she got herself into, were for our benefit, because those would be the questions we'd be asking, or the questions that we would have in our mind. So it was like a rhetorical question asked so you can give the answer. That's more important than the question. So it was really, but she did sound like a whiner. She sounded like a real Italian complainer. But Jesus said she never doubted. She never had a doubt in her mind, but in her heart, the whole duration. But yeah, but the gift itself, when we recognize that this gift is a gift, and again, that's something that I try to remember. Nothing we did to earn this. This is not merit-based. It was given to us as a gift. Our work begins once we recognize it being given to us as a gift. Now, God asks us, well, how much do you want? How deep do you want to go? And he gives us the analogy. Remember, Ken Marie, he gives us the analogy of a summer floating close to the surface. Summer, 10 or 15 feet deep. I don't know what he said. And then summer, close to the bottom of the ocean there. Those are the souls of the divine will. Again, they can be different degrees, even though they may be fully and completely living. And that's, we talked about that too. That's the accidental glory. It's the containers in heaven. For example, if everybody's 100% happy in heaven, let's say everybody's in a 12-ounce container, the accidental glory, they can't make them 101% happy, but they can increase the size of the container from 12 ounce to 16 ounce. Well, now what's greater, 12 ounce of total happiness or 16 ounce of total? Of course, it's 16. It's like the Eucharist, with the parental communion versus a 20-minute communion. So again, this, I think, draws, to me, speaks volumes, because everything we do is important. It's either going to be for our damnation, or it's going to be to help us toward our salvation. And I think this exile is explaining to us that really we're being watched, and for good reason, because God is giving us, he's giving us a flashlight at every turn. He's saying, read the signs. I mean, the signs are all around us. I mean, look at the world and the condition it's in. Why now? Of course, we know why now. But thank God we're here, and we're together. All of us are together. And this journey is really together. God didn't make us, he didn't create us to be alone. He always created us to be in solidarity with each other. And that unity that he talks about, and many people talk about, we need to be united, Well, Father Inuzzi, and even Jesus, I think, even says in the volumes, he says that it's the truth that unity must be based around. You cannot be united with anything outside of truth. Because what other common denominator would you have that's really a valid one, or one that's not like a moving target? The truth is where people circle. And that's why I think that quote of St. Cyril Jerusalem, who speaks about the intermediate coming, he says, when things get difficult, flee from the wolves, gather with the sheep, and never leave the church. So we're going to have to make perhaps some tough decisions. Maybe we have to realign ourselves with some of the folks that we're spending time with for our protection and for their protection as well, and for our families. So flee from the wolves, gather with the sheep, never leave the church. What do you think, Maureen? You want to tackle volume 32?
Sure.
Okay.
October 1st, 1933. Enchanting scenes that Jesus enjoys in the soul who lives in his will. Continuous call that God and the creature make. The divine volition never leaves me. It seems to me that it is always inside and outside of me, as in act of surprising me, because it wants to place its act in everything that I do. If I pray, if I suffer, if I labor, and even if I sleep, it wants to give me its divine rest in my sleep. It always wants to give itself something to do. And in everything, It calls me by telling me, let me descend into the depth of all your acts, and I will make you rise into the heights of my act. We will compete, you to ascend and I to descend.
I mean, Ken, Jesus gives us such a loving description in his, we'll call them instructions. Remember, there's no formula, but there's instructions. God is guiding us here. But he's so loving, I guess, because that's himself. I mean, he can't be other than loving. But he wants to be in, and we're talking about this, he has his eye on us. He's spying on us. He wants to be in everything we do. And Maureen, we talked about this on the ebook series also, that he wants his paternity back. He wants to be the father again for all souls, because the souls have rejected the father. And he wants that paternity back. And that's why, again, he's doing everything he can without invalidating our free will to bring us back. Ken, any thoughts on that?
I really like the last line here where it says, we will compete, you to ascend and I to descend. And it doesn't have any qualifiers on there. It doesn't say, and we'll meet in the middle.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
that Jesus descends. I think when we first start out on this journey, that he descends all the way down to our level. And then slowly, I think we start to ascend, and the amount or the length of his descent grows shorter, but he meets us right where we are. And I think that's constant throughout the volumes, that wherever Louisa is, Jesus meets her there. He may bring her along and tell her that she's not right where she was the day before, the week before, but meets her right where she is. And I think he meets us right where we are. And I thank God for that. We don't have to attain certain levels on our own before he'll agree to meet us.
And we see a little bit of this in the New Testament. I mean, it's divine will hasn't come yet, just to Our Lady, but Jesus goes where we are. He descends. Where does he descend? To the house of the tax collector, to the hangout of the prostitutes, to Zacchaeus's house for dinner. All these places he descends, kind of. And where would a father not go to save his children? It's unbelievable. Our God, what he does. He's a God. He created the whole universe and he descends. It's amazing. Just that shows us how much he loves us.
Yeah, the only middle ground that I can think of, two instances. Number one, Jesus explains in one of the volumes, he says, living in the divine world is like being halfway between heaven and earth. Okay, we're right in the middle there, getting the grace of heaven, but still have the sacrifice of earth. The other one is, remember we talked about, I don't have the, I had it before we went on air, and of course it disappeared. When Jesus talks about that the gift is not a gift unless it's confirmed. We need to respond to the gift. It could just be something simple like gratitude. Thank you, Lord. But once the response is made, the gift is confirmed. And then it takes traction, and then we start to get the efficacy of what God has given us, what grace and graces he's given us for that moment and for the future. But he says, for those gifts that are not confirmed, that do not receive a response from us, they sort of go in this state of between heaven and earth, waiting for the response. And I think this is also, we can talk about, you know, the voids. How many voids, Jesus tells us we need to fill each and every one of our voids. We're not talking about the void that God created in us, which is that cavity to house him. We're talking about the voids that we caused by missed opportunities to give glory and honor to God and the level of God. But yeah, this between heaven and earth, well, think about it, Ken, Maureen, if before the divine will, if somebody said to you, I can show you a way where you can go halfway between where you are now and where you want to be. Are you willing to do it? You won't lose a thing. Of course we would. So why couldn't everyone say yes to the divine will? I think two reasons. Number one, I think to some, it's unbelievable. It's far-fetched. It's not, they're sort of limiting God a bit without knowing it. Or the second is that we have this one idea in our mind of how God is going to operate, and we're going to stay with that design, whether we should or not, and we're not going to have that flexibility. But I think God has to touch us. I mean, I think each and every one of us have been touched by God in one way or another for us to say yes. I mean, Our Lady was touched, and she said yes, and God did all the work. And again, the greatest example, we just read Article 507, she's the greatest example. So, Ken, Maureen, we know that if we give our fiat, and if we mean it, of course, He knows our intention, God is going to make sure that we get to where He wants to bring us. And of course, ultimately, where we wanted to go anyway, we just lost track of where we wanted to be. Just your thoughts on have you recognized God in taking you where you need to be once you just basically stop fighting and said, okay, I gave you my fiat?
I think it's important that you realize you're not going to understand everything. Like, you're not going to understand right away everything, and that's okay. It's all about trust. You trust Jesus. I trust in you. I know you want the best for me. I don't understand this, but I want it. I desire it because you told me what this is, and you want to give it to me. I mean, what else could we say to the Lord who wants to give us a gift? Well, let me think about this. I have to really understand it all first. No, He's God. He knows the best. He knows all things, and He knows what we need. And so I think, like Father Inuzzi said, if you don't have trust, you can't have this gift. It won't work for you. You have to trust. Lean not on your own understanding.
Yeah. And I think the difficulty is that we all try to, whether we believe it or not, or think about it or not, we all imitate somebody. Recently, it's kind of scared me. In the morning, I'll be in getting ready for work and look in the mirror, and I make a movement, and it's like, I'm my father. How did this happen?
And everybody's going, uh-huh.
And but the, you know, from the time we're infants, in order to become an adult, in order to grow, we imitate people, right? We imitate what they eat. We imitate the jobs that they have. We want what they want. And this is new. And so it's not like there's been a whole lot of people that have lived this gift of the divine will that we can imitate. And when you approach people and say, hey, and I'm of the three of us, I know I'm the newest to it. And I mentioned this to people. They look at you like you have three eyes. it's subtle things that they can all of a sudden wake people up to. Maybe they do want to imitate Louisa or imitate the examples maybe that we're becoming in trying to live this gift. But until there's a general understanding of it, like there is for, and even the great saints, you know, and I talk about my buddy Father McKay, who's upstairs a lot, and his Carmelite heart, and John of the Cross and Teresa Avila, and how many people over the centuries have tried to imitate the Carmelite way of life, or the Dominican way of life, or the Augustinian way of life. And this is all new. So I don't think we can expect people to all of a sudden say, oh yeah, I want what you're doing. I think as people are introduced, as hearts are moved by the Holy Spirit, I know I just continue to invite and then pray for people that, you know, if you want to check it out, just like Maureen did with me, that, you know, you're always welcome. And so I feel privileged to be a part of this much smaller group. It's almost, you know, like an exclusive club to some degree, not because we want it to be exclusive.
It's a nobody club. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. But it's just because I think there's more people aware than we thought based on the retreat 6 weeks ago or 7 weeks ago, but it's still a closely guarded secret, but a secret for the most part, and word's finally starting to get out.
Ken, what did we had a retreat at Malvern, and what, there were 300 plus people, and the priest that was there, who is Ken's friend, what did he say about the gathering there?
Oh, so it was interesting because Father's the new rector out there, and he had said he never saw such a large group of people where, to a person, every person was full of joy. And it's, I if you're trying to live in the divine will, and even, you know, we're not in it full time, but there's such a joy among the people. I the cenacle that we're a part of in the morning, to hear the joy in people's voices and the excitement. And even sometimes people are giddy about what they're hearing and what they're learning. And he was amazed that a group that large, that there wasn't anybody that was downtrodden or were mad at the world or resentful or what have you. And it's part of what I think is bringing him along. You know, he grabbed a couple of books and actually gave them to a few people that are asking me questions.
Good for you. Well, you know, we can learn a lot from St. Hannibal, who gives us great advice. And, you know, St. Hannibal is Louis's spiritual director for 17 years. For those of you who are not aware, St. Hannibal was also, De Francia was the spiritual director to Melanie Calvert, who was the seer to Our Lady of La Salette, fully approved apparition of our church. Also the founder of two religious orders, the Daughters of Divine Zeal and the Rogationist Brothers. So he says, he hits that what you mentioned about, you know, sharing this gift. He uses words carefully. He says something, I don't have it in front of me, but he says something to the effect, I only share this gift when moved to, or when moved to, I guess is the best word I can use. So he's not handing out leaflets to everybody. He's not sharing it like the consecration, like St. Louis de Montfort, which really no one's going to say no to. He does it in a delicate way, probably because it has to at this time. Again, it's a small club, like Ken said. The second thing he says, which I found very interesting also, he says is he only reads 1 to 2 passages a day so that he can comprehend as best he can, so he can fully masticate, chew on it, and digest what he's reading, as opposed to just, you know, reading for the sake of reading. So I found that interesting. Two hints. It's to be shared when you're prompted to. I always have a card in my pocket when I go to church, but rarely do I give it. Probably if I go to church 5 days a week, daily mass, I may give it once. I just feel like that person there. Again, I'm not saying that, trust my feelings, because look where I was before this. I think also we're not going to get as disappointed, because, you know, if you tell 10 people, Ken, Maureen, about the divine will that we don't know, you're going to get 9 at least that are going to reject it, that don't even want to listen to it. And then that can be demoralizing at times. I don't think our Lord wants that to happen, at least initially, until we get some traction. But yeah, this is for everyone. In fact, I'd like to... actually, let me read this. I'll do my closing first, and I'll go to YouTube. Just basically talking about what we're talking about. This is from volume 11, September 25th, 1913. Jesus tells Louisa, quote, "My daughter, I had to do this in such a way that sanctity, this gift of living in the divine will, might be easy and accessible to all, unless they did not want it. It had to be accessible and easy in all conditions, in all circumstances, and in every place," end quote. So this is without borders, without boundaries. Anyone in the state of grace, Jesus tells us, with a desire to receive this gift, will receive it. And that's, I think, the delineation. Also, a lot of times we're afraid to say we're living the divine will. That doesn't mean we're living totally. Remember, there's 3 ways to live in the divine will: perfectly, imperfectly, and completely. Most of us are doing it imperfectly, and that's okay. We're still living in the divine will, at least sometimes, in and out. Ken, final thoughts?
The exile may be painful at times, but like we've said over and over again, the journey is well worth it. The exile is nothing new in the spiritual life. It's been going on for since Christ came and started to interact with people, right? John of the Cross and the Dark Night of the Soul. So the exile is not going to last forever. And to your point, the journey is is going to be well worth it.
And no surprise too that Jesus taught us about going into exile first. Mm. He experienced that. He did it. Exactly. Now he's asking us to do it as well. Maureen? I think you're muted, Maureen. Let me see.
My dog was barking, so I muted myself. Oh, okay. That's how I was going to say, Peter. He's with you in the journey. If you leave the journey, you don't have him. Stay on the journey. He's there. And during that journey is when you get your muscles. You get stronger as the journey continues. And it have hills and valleys, but you get into the groove, you know, you just keep moving. And you say, oh, I've been down that road before and I know it's going to end. So you gain wisdom as the journey goes on and moves on and you get closer to your goal. So.
Couldn't agree more. Well, I think we're out of time. Got a couple of things I'd like to just bring up to speed really quickly, if I may. Tomorrow, Thursday, on Radio Maria will be Mother Gabriel Maria and the Benedictine Daughters of Divine Will every Thursday. So you definitely want to listen to Mother and the sisters. They really, they present the Divine Will from a very, practical approach and a very fun approach, I think. So that's one. Have something also here, every Friday, you will be able to again, listen to Maureen, as she co-hosts the Divine Will ebook series. We take Father Nuzzi's doctoral dissertation and we methodically go through it. And again, that's got abrogation, approval by the Gregorian University of Rome, authorized by the Holy See. So nothing in this book cannot be read in a public discourse. So that's wonderful. On Sunday, we'll have, Saturday. Oh, this, I forgot about this. This is something new. I had this idea. You know, the Benedictine order is the first order. It's the oldest order. And the Benedictine Daughters of Divine Will, of course, with Mother Gabriel. I happened to find about this radio station, and they're located in Nome, Alaska. And they broadcast to remote villages. They broadcast, I'm not kidding you not, to igloos. They have people with aluminum foil on radios outside their igloo to bring in a signal. It's the oldest Catholic radio station in the United States. And we have a program now to bring hope to this area. So that'll be on Saturday. It'll be a live taping from 9:30 a.m. till 10 a.m. With Mother Gabriel Marie and a few of the Benedictine daughters, because it's only a half hour. We couldn't have all, because there'd be no time for anyone to speak. So that's on Saturday. And of course, Sunday is our typical with Mother Gabriel Mary and the Benedictine Daughters. That begins at 2, Adoration and Rosary begins at 1 o'clock. And don't forget Ken on Wednesdays. He's got a very busy day on Wednesday. He has two radio programs at 4 and 5 p.m. Right, Ken? Ken, can you give us some in his sign, right? How do they connect to your radio programs on Wednesday?
Either through our website at inhissign.com or there's an app for the radio station, WTMR, where the master reigns. If you put the app on your tablet or smartphone, it's probably the clearest way to get it. And 4 to 5, on Eastern time with Father McKay, we talk about the saints in the liturgical calendar. And then at 5 o'clock, I interview somebody in the Catholic world, usually authors, but Peter and I get together on the last Wednesday of each month for Divine Will Wednesday. So we'll be together next Wednesday from 5 to 6 and then back here from 7 to whenever we finish.
We're finishing soon. Maureen, you want to give us a little...
I got to run to the airport.
Yeah, if you have to go, I know you've got to go. Maureen, give us a little update on your morning cenacle you have with the canon, your dad, and can you give us a...
Yeah, so...
If someone would like to participate...
Yeah, we read the volume. It started during COVID, and we read the volumes. We read them very slow. And I think we just read the volumes, and we don't teach. We let Jesus teach us. And we make comments here and there. And every once in a while, we'll have someone join us from Kansas City or Jacksonville, Florida. And they hear it on the radio show with Ken, and they'll just join us. And we don't see each other. So you can come in curlers and coffee in your pajamas And there's, it doesn't matter. And we just can hear each other speak. So everyone gets a turn to speak, and whoever wants to speak can read. And if you want to just be quiet and listen, you can just be quiet and listen. So it's nice if you're driving to work early. It's early. It's from 6 to 7:30. And we do that so that everyone can make it to Mass. And if people are like me, once your day begins, sometimes you don't sit down and read. So that's why we have it early, so that we can read the divine will and then get on with our day. And when we don't do it, we all say we feel like we're missing something. You know, we missed. Yeah. And then, you know, the deacon's with us and he gives us his blessing at the end. And
beautiful. So
anybody's welcome.
Another opportunity to give God our fiat. That's all. Yeah. It's just plain and simple. Also, I did neglect to include the slide too. Father Anuzzi will be having a retreat on Friday. This Friday, a couple of days from today, 10 a.m. to 5:45 p.m. If I've sent that out a couple of days now in advance, if you need the connectivity information and you need the itinerary, just send us an email at maryshill@queenofthedivineworld.org and I'll send it out to you. It's free, but there is a free will offering. That's this is actually Father's fundraiser that a group in Rhode Island does for him, but due to Father's health. Father's not in the greatest of health. He's not being specific. But again, this is the fundraiser to help him with the incidental bills and things like that. So we'll mention that on the email that I'm going to be sending out this evening. Maureen?
That's great.
Ken, safe driving. Maureen, love you.
Okay.
Thanks, God, for this opportunity. And love one another. We're going to need each other very, very soon if we don't do it already.
Yeah, all right, bye, everybody.
See everyone tomorrow.